Chapter 4. Zaylee. Are you really not going to talk to me? I leaned to the side of Nyla's saddle to get a look at Zane's stone face. I expected the first hour of silence, but now it's hour 3. How was practice? I try instead. Zane can never resist a conversation about his favorite sport. Is Mbalu's ankle okay? Do you think she'll be healed in time for the games? Zane's mouth opens for a split second, but he catches himself. His jaw clamps shut and he smacks Nyla's reins, riding her faster through the towering jackalberry trees. Zane, come on, I say. You can't ignore me for the rest of your life.
I can try.
My gods, I roll my eyes. What do you want from me?
How about an apology?
Zane snaps.
Baba almost died. And now you want to sit here and pretend like it never happened?
I already said sorry, I snap back, to you, to Baba.
That doesn't change what happened.
Then I'm sorry I can't change the past. My yell echoes through the trees, igniting a new stretch of silence between us. I run my fingers along the cracks of worn leather in Nyla's saddle as an uncomfortable pit forms in my chest.
For God's sakes, think, Zaylee.
Mama Agba's voice echoes in my mind.
Who would protect your father if you hurt those men? Who would keep Zane safe when the guards come for blood?
Zane, I'm sorry, I say quietly. Really, I feel awful, more than you can know. But
Zane releases a sigh of exasperation. Of course, there's a but.
Because it isn't just my fault, I say, my anger reaching a boiling point. The guards are the reason Baba went out on the water.
And you're the reason he almost drowned,
Zane shoots back.
You left him alone.
I bite my tongue. There's no point in arguing. Strong and handsome, Kosidan that he is, Zane doesn't understand why I need Mama Agba's training. Boys in Ilorin try to be his friend. Girls try to steal his heart. Even the guards flock his way, singing praises of his Agbon skills. He doesn't understand what it's like to be me, to walk around in a diviner's skin, to jump every time a guard appears, never knowing how a confrontation will end.
I'll start with this one.
My stomach clenches at the memory of the guard's rough grip. Would Zane yell at me if he knew? Would he shout if he realized how hard it was for me not to cry? We ride in silence as the trees begin to thin and the city of Lagos comes into view, surrounded by a gate crafted from the heartwood of the jackalberry trees. The capital is everything Ilorin isn't. Instead of the calming sea, Lagos is flooded with an endless horde of people. Even from afar, so many swell within the city walls, it's impossible to understand how they all live. I survey the layout of the capital from atop Nyla's back, noting the white hair of passing diviners along the way. Lagos's Kosidan outnumber its diviners 3-1, making them easy to spot. Though the space between Lagos's walls is long and wide, my people congregate along the city's fringe in slums. It's the only place they'd allow diviners to live. I settle back in Nyla's saddle, the sight of the slums deflating something in my chest. Centuries ago, the 10 Magi clans and their diviner children were isolated all over Orisha. While Kosidan populated the cities, the clans lived along the mountains and oceans and fields. But with time, Magi ventured out and clans spread across Orisha's lands, curiosity and opportunity driving their migration. Over the years, Magi and Kosidan began to marry, creating families with diviners and Kosidan, like mine. As the blended families multiplied, the number of Orisha's Magi grew. Before the raid, Lagos housed the biggest Magi population. Now those diviners are all that's left. Thane pulls on Nyla's reins, stopping her when we near the wooden gate.
I'll wait here. It'll be too crazy for her in there.
I nod and slide off, giving Nyla's dark, wet nose a kiss. I smile as her rough tongue licks my cheek, but the smile fades when I glance back at Thane. Unspoken words hang in the air, but I turn and keep moving forward all the same.
Wait!
Thane slides off Nyla, catching up to me in a single bound. He places a rusted dagger into my hand. I have a staff.
I know, he says, just in case.
I slide the weapon into my worn pocket. Thanks. We stare at the dirt ground in silence. Thane kicks a rock by his feet. I don't know who will break first until he finally speaks.
I'm not blind, Zell. I know this morning wasn't all your fault, but I need you to do better.
For a moment, Zane's eyes flash, threatening to reveal everything he holds back.
Baba's only getting worse. And the guards are breathing down your neck. You can't afford to slip right now. If you make another mistake, it could be your last.
I nod, keeping my gaze on the ground. I can handle a lot of things, but Zane's disappointment cuts like a knife.
Just do better, Thane sighs. Please. Baba won't survive if he loses you. I won't either.
I try to ignore the tightness in my chest. I'm sorry, I whisper. I'll do better. I promise.
Good.
Thane pastes a smile on his face and ruffles my hair.
Enough of this. Go sell the hell out of that fish.
I laugh and readjust the straps on my pack. How much do you think I can get?
200.
That's it? I cock my head. You really think that lowly of me?
That's crazy coins, eh?
I bet you I can get more. Zane's smile widens, gleaming with the shine of a good bet.
Get above 200 and I'll stay home with Baba next week.
Oh, you're on, I grin, already picturing my rematch with Yemi. Let's see how she does against my new staff. I rush forward, ready to make the trade. But when I reach the checkpoint, my stomach churns at the sight of the royal guards. It's all I can do to keep my body still as I slide my collapsible staff into the waistband of my draped pants.
Name?
A tall guard barks, keeping his eyes on his ledger. His dark curls fuzz in the heat, collecting the sweat dripping down his cheeks.
Zele Adebola, I answer, with as much respect as I can muster. No screw-ups. I swallow hard. At least, no more today.
The guard barely spares me a glance before writing the information down.
Origin.
Ilorin.
Ilorin?
Short and stout, another guard wobbles as he approaches, using the giant wall to keep himself upright. The pungent smell of alcohol wafts into the air with his unwelcome presence.
What's a maggot like you doing so far from home?
His words slur just before incomprehension, dripping from his mouth like the spittle on his chin. My chest clenches as he nears. The drunken glaze in his eyes turns dangerous.
Purpose or visit?
The tall, thankfully sober guard asks. Trading. At this, a disgusting smile crawls onto the drunk guard's face. He reaches for my wrist, but I back away and raise the wrapped package.
Trading fish,
I clarify. But despite my words, he lunges forward. I grunt as he wraps his pudgy hands around my neck and presses me against the wooden wall. He leans in so close, I can count the black and yellow stains on his teeth.
I can see why you're selling fish, he laughs. What's the going rate for a maggot these days, Cain? 2 bronze pieces?
My skin crawls and my fingers itch for my hidden staff. It's against the law for Magi and Kosidan to so much as kiss after the raid, but it doesn't keep the guards from pawing at us like animals. My anger twists into a black rage, a darkness I sensed in Mama whenever the guards dared to get in her way. With its rush, I want to shove him back and snap each of the soldiers' fat fingers. But with my rage comes Zane's concern, Baba's heartache, Mama Agba's scolding. Think, Zaylee. Think of Baba. Think of Zane. I promised not to mess this up. I can't let them down now. I repeat this again and again until the brute unhands me. He laughs to himself before taking another swig from his bottle, proud, at ease. I turn toward the other guard, unable to hide the hatred in my eyes. I don't know who I despise more, the drunk for touching me or this bastard for letting it occur. Any other questions? I ask through my teeth. The guard shakes his head. I move through the gate with the speed of a chitana before either can change his mind. But it only takes a few steps away from the gates before the frenzy of Lagos makes me want to run back outside. My gods, I breathe, overwhelmed by the sheer number of people. Villagers, merchants, guards, and nobles fill the wide dirt roads, each moving with precision and purpose. In the distance, the royal palace looms, its pristine white walls and gilded arches gleam in the sun. Its presence is a stark contrast to the slums lining the city's fringe. I marvel at the rustic dwellings, breath catching at the towering shacks. Like a vertical labyrinth, the shanties sit atop one another, each starting where another stops. Though many are brown and fading, others shine with bright paints and colorful art. The vibrant protest defies the title of slum, an ember of beauty where the monarchy sees none. With tentative steps, I begin walking toward a city center. As I pass the slums, I notice the vast majority of the diviners roaming its streets aren't much older than me. In Lagos, it's impossible for any diviner children who lived through the raid to reach adulthood without being thrown in prison or getting forced into the stocks.
Please! I didn't mean to! Ah!
A sharp cry rings out. I jump as a stalker's cane strikes down in front of me. It cuts through the flesh of a young diviner, leaving bloodstains on the last clean clothes the boy will ever wear. The child falls into a pile of broken ceramics, shattered tiles his thin arms probably couldn't hold. The stalker raises his cane again, and this time I catch the gleam of its black magicite shaft. Gods! The acrid smell of burning flesh hits me as the stalker presses the cane into the boy's back. Smoke rises from his skin as he struggles to crawl to his knees. The vicious sight makes my fingers numb, reminding me of my own potential fate in the stocks. Come on! I force myself forward, though my heart sinks. Move, or that'll be you. I rush toward the center of Lagos, doing my best to ignore the smell of sewage leaking from the slum streets. When I enter the pastel-colored buildings of the merchant quarter, the odor shifts to sweetbread and cinnamon, making my stomach growl. I brace myself for the barter as the central exchange hums with the sounds of endless trading. But when the bazaar comes into view, I'm forced to stop in my tracks. No matter how often I trade big catch here with Baba, the madness of the central market never ceases to amaze me. More tumultuous than the streets of Lagos, the bazaar is alive with every Orishan good imaginable. In one row alone, grains from the vast fields of Mina sit alongside coveted ironworks from the factories of Gombe. I walk through the crowded booths, enjoying the sweet smell of fried plantain. With ears perked, I tried to catch the pattern of the barter, the speed of every trade. Everyone fights, using words as knives. It's more cutthroat than the market of Ilorin. Here there's no compromise, only business. I pass wooden stalls of chitinair cubs, smiling at each tiny horn that protrudes from their foreheads. I have to wade past carts of patterned textiles before finally reaching the fish exchange.
40 bronze pieces! For a tiger fish? I won't pay a piece above 30!
The shouts of hagglers at work ring so loud I can barely hear myself think. This isn't the floating market of Ilorin. A regular barter won't work. I bite the inside of my cheek, surveying the crowd. I need a mark, a fool, some...
Trout! A man shrieks. Do I look like I eat trout?
I turn to the plump noble, clad in a dark purple dashiki. He narrows his hazel eyes at the Kosidan merchant like he has just received a grave insult.
I have sea robin, the merchant offers. Flounder, bass. I said I want swordfish, the noble snaps. My servant says you refuse to sell it.
They aren't in season.
Yet the king eats it every night.
The merchant scratches the back of his neck.
If a swordfish is caught, it goes to the palace. That's the law of the land.
The noble's face turns red and he pulls out a small velvet purse.
What does he offer?
He jingles the coins.
I'll pay double.
The merchant stares at the purse longingly but stays firm.
I can't risk it.
I can,
I shout. The noble turns, eyes narrowed with suspicion. I wave him toward me, away from the merchant's stand.
You have swordfish? He asks.
Better. A fish no one else in this market can sell you.
His mouth falls open, and I feel the same rush I get when a fish circles my bait. I unwrap the sailfish with care and move it under a ray of light so that its scales gleam.
Skies! The noble gapes. It's magnificent.
It tastes even better than it looks. Red-tailed sailfish, fresh from the coast of Ilorin. They're not in season, so you can be sure even the king's not eating this tonight. A smile crawls onto the noble's face, and I know I've made my own catch. He holds out his purse.
50 silver pieces.
My eyes widen. But I grit my teeth. 50. 50 gets us by this tax, maybe leaves us enough for a new boat. But if the guards raise the taxes next quarter moon, 50 won't keep me out of the stocks. I let out a loud laugh and start rewrapping the fish. The noble's brow furrows.
What are you doing?
Taking this jewel to someone who can afford it.
How dare you?
Forgive me. I interrupt. I don't have time for a man who bids 50 on a prize worth 10 times that much. The noble grumbles, but he reaches into his pockets and pulls out another velvet purse.
You won't get a piece above 300.
My gods. I dig my feet into the dirt to keep myself from wobbling. That's more than we've ever seen in our lives. At least 6 moons of taxes, even if they're raised. I open my mouth to take the deal, but something in the noble's eyes makes me hesitate. If he folded so quickly on the last offer, maybe he'll fold again.
Take it, I imagine Zane warning. It's more than enough.
But I'm far too close to stop now. I'm sorry. I shrug and finish wrapping the sailfish. I can't waste a meal for a king on someone who can't afford it. The noble's nostrils flare. Gods, I may have gone too far. I wait for him to break, but he only seethes in silence. I'm forced to walk away. Each step lasts an eternity as I crumble under the weight of my mistake. You'll find another one, I try to calm myself. Another noble, desperate to prove his worth. I can do better than 300. The fish is worth more than that. Right?
Damn it. I almost ram my head against a shrimp stall. What am I going to do now? Who's going to be stupid enough to...
Wait!
As I turn, the plump noble shoves 3 jingling purses into my chest.
Fine, he grumbles in defeat. 500.
I stare at him in disbelief, which he mistakes for doubt.
Count them if you must.
I open one purse, and the sight is so beautiful I nearly cry. The silver shines like the scales of the sailfish, its weight a promise of things to come.
500! After a new boat, that's almost a year's worth of rest for Baba.
Finally! I've done something right. I hand the fish to the noble, unable to hide my glowing smile. Enjoy. Tonight, you'll eat better than the king. The noble sneers, but the corners of his mouth twitch up in satisfaction. I slide the velvet purses into my pack and start walking, heart buzzing so quickly it rivals the insanity of the market. But I freeze when screams fill the air. This isn't the sound of haggling. What the... I jump back as a fruit stand explodes. A troop of royal guards charges through. Mangoes and Orishan peaches fly through the air. Second by second, more guards flood the market, searching for something, someone. I stare at the commotion in bewilderment before realizing I have to move. There are 500 silver pieces in my pack. For once, I have more than my life to lose. I push through the crowd with a new fervor, desperate to escape. I'm almost past the textiles when someone grabs my wrist.
What in God's names?
I whip out my compacted staff, expecting to meet the arm of a royal guard or a petty thief. But when I turn, it's neither a guard nor a crook who's grabbed me. It's a cloaked, amber-eyed girl. She pulls me into a hidden opening between 2 stalls with a grip so tight I can't fight my way free.
Please, she begs. You have to get me out of here.
Chapter 5. Zaylee. For a moment, I can't breathe. The copper-skinned girl shakes with a fear so visceral, it leaks into my skin. Shouts grow louder as the guards thunder by, getting closer with each passing second. They can't catch me with this girl. If they do, I'll die.
Let me go,
I order, almost as desperate as she is.
No, no, please.
Tears well in her amber eyes and her grasp tightens.
Please help me. I have done something unforgivable. If they catch me.
Her eyes fill with a terror that is all too familiar. Because when they catch her, it's not a matter of whether she'll die. It's only a question of when. On the spot? Starving in the jails? Or will the guards take turns passing her around, destroy her from within until she suffocates from grief?
You must protect those who can't defend themselves.
Mama Akbar's words from this morning seep into my head. I picture her stern gaze.
That is the way of the staff.
I can't, I breathe. But even as the words leave my mouth, I brace myself for the fight.
Damn it.
It doesn't matter if I can help. I won't be able to live with myself if I don't.
Come on.
I grab the girl's arm and barge into a clothing stall larger than the rest. Before the cloth merchant can scream, I put my hand over her mouth and press Zane's dagger to her neck.
What are you doing?
The girl asks. I inspect her cloak. How did she even make it this far? The girl's copper skin and thick robes scream of noble blood, rich with velvet and golden hues. "Put on that brown cloak," I order her, before turning back to the merchant. Beads of sweat drip down her skin. With a diviner thief, one wrong move could be her last. "I'm not going to hurt you," I promise. "I just need to make a trade." I peek out the front of the stall as the girl changes into the muted cloak, tightening my grasp when the merchant lets out a muffled yelp. The market's crawling with enough guards to fill an army. The scrambling traders and villagers add to the chaos. I search for a way out of this madness, but no escape route emerges. We have no choice. We'll just have to test our fortune. I duck back into the stall as the girl pulls the hood of her new cloak low over her forehead. I grab the fine robe she was wearing and shove it into the merchant's hands. The fear in the trader's eyes dims as the soft velvet passes through her fingers. I lower the dagger from her neck and grab a cloak of my own, hiding my white hair under its dark hood. "Are you ready?" I ask. The girl manages a nod. A hint of determination flashes in her eyes, but I still detect a paralyzing terror. "Follow me." We exit the stall and step into the pandemonium. Though guards stop right in front of us, our brown cloaks act as a shield. They are searching for noble blood. Thank the gods. Maybe we actually have a chance. "Walk quickly," I hiss under my breath as we move through the spaces between the textile stalls. "But don't," I grab her by the cloak before she goes too far. "Don't run. You'll draw attention. Blend into the crowd." The girl nods and tries to speak, but no words come out. It's all she can do to tail me like a lion or cub. Never more than 2 steps behind. We push through the crowd until we reach the market's edge. Though guards cover the main entrance, there's an opening on the side, manned by only one guard. When he steps forward to interrogate a noble, I spot our chance. Quick. I squeeze behind a stock trader's stall to slip from the crowded market down the stone streets of the merchant quarter. I breathe a sigh of relief as the girl's petite frame breaks free. But when we turn, 2 hulking guards block our path. Oh, gods. My feet skid to a stop. The silver coins jingle in my pack. I glance at the girl. Her brown skin has lost most of its color. "Is there a problem?" I ask the guards as innocently as I can. One crosses his tree-like arms.
"Fugitives on the loose. No one leaves until she's caught."
"Our mistake," I apologize with a respectful bow. "We'll wait inside." "Damn it." I turn and walk back toward the stalls, scanning the frantic market. If all the exits are covered, we need a new plan. We need a new way to get... Wait. Though I'm almost back in the market, the girl isn't by my side. I turn to find her frozen before the guards, the slightest tremble visible in her awkwardly placed hands.
"For God's sakes!"
I open my mouth to hiss her name, but I don't even know it. I've risked everything for a stranger, and now she's going to get us killed. I try to distract the guards, but one is already reaching for the girl's hood. There's no time. I grab my metal rod and flick.
"Duck!"
The girl drops to the ground. I whip my staff and smack it against the guard's skull. A sickening crack rings through the air as he collapses into the dirt. Before the other can unsheath his sword, I thrust my staff into his sternum.
Ugh!
With a swift kick to the jaw, he falls back, lying unconscious in the red dirt.
"Skies!"
The girl curses like a noble. I retract my staff. Skies is right. Now I've attacked the guards. Now we're really going to die. Zane's imminent fury flashes in my mind as we take off, sprinting as fast as we can through the merchant quarter.
"Don't screw this up. Get in, get out. Where in that plan did it make sense to help a fugitive?"
As we tear through the streets lined with pastel-colored buildings, two troops of royal guards fight to take us down. Their shouts grow loud, their footsteps pound even louder. With swords drawn, they close in, only a few paces behind. "Do you know where we are?" I ask. "A little," she pants, eyes wide with panic. "Enough to get us to the slums, but head there." She pushes forward, sprinting a step ahead of me to take the lead. I follow her as we run through the stone streets, blowing by confused merchants in our dash. Adrenaline rushes through my veins. Heat buzzes beneath my skin. "We're not going to make it. There's no way we'll escape." "Relax," I hear Mama Agba in my head. I force myself to take a deep breath. "Be resourceful. Use the surroundings to your advantage." I scan the compact streets of the merchant quarter in desperation. As we round the corner, I spy a towering stack of wooden barrels. That'll do. I expand my staff and take a giant swing at the tower's base. When the first barrel comes crashing to the ground, I know the rest are soon to follow. The guards' screams fill the air as the barrels take them down. The diversion gives us enough time to sprint into the slums and stop to catch our breaths. "What now?" the girl gasps. "You don't know the way out?" She shakes her head, sweat dripping down her face. "I've never been to this part of town." The slums look like a labyrinth from afar, but from within the shacks and shanties cluster like a web. The narrow paths and dirt streets tangle before our eyes. There's no exit in sight. "This way." I point to the street opposite the merchant quarter. If that way leads toward the city center, this has to lead out. We kick up clouds of dirt, running as fast as we can. But a troop of guards cuts us off. We have no choice but to dash the other way. "Skies," the girl gasps as we race through an alley, riling up a group of homeless Kosidan. For a moment, I'm amazed she's made it this far. I doubt evading her soldiers was part of her noble education. We round another corner, just paces ahead of the guards. I push myself to run faster when the girl yanks me back. "What are you?" She presses her hand to my mouth and pushes me against a shanty's wall. It's only then that I notice the narrow space we've squeezed between. "Please, work." For the second time in over a decade, I lift up a prayer, calling to any god who might still be there. "Please," I beg. "Please, please hide us." My heart threatens to break free of my ribcage, pounding so hard I'm convinced the sound will give us away. But when the troop nears, they rumble by like rhinomes chasing prey. I look up to the sky, blinking as the clouds pass overhead. Bright rays of light shine in between their gaps. It's almost like the gods have risen from the dead, resurrected from the graveyard formed after the carnage of the raid. Whatever's up there is blessing me. I just hope that blessing doesn't run out. We shimmy out of the crawl space and tear down another path, accidentally slamming into a pair of curious diviners. One drops his bottle of rum, and the sharp scent wafts into my nose, so strong my nostrils burn. With its odor, another lesson from Mama Agba's hut resurfaces. I scoop the bottle off the ground and scan the streets for my missing ingredient. There. It's only a few meters from the girl's head. "Grab the torch."
"What?"
"The torch," I shriek. "The one right in front of you." It takes her a second to wrestle the metal torch from its hold, but when she does, we take off running. As we pass the last of the slums, I rip a piece of cloth from my cloak and stuff it into the bottle.
"What is this for?" she asks.
"Let's hope you don't find out." We break free of the slums, and the wooden gate of Lagos's entrance comes into view. The key to our escape, barred by a royal blockade. My stomach sinks as we skid to a halt before the endless line of armed guards.
The soldiers ride menacing black pantheners, each giant beast bearing its fangs. Their dark fur shines like a thin layer of oil under the sun, matte rainbows of color embedded throughout their black coats. Even as the pantheners crouch, they still tower over us, primed and ready to pounce.
"You're surrounded,"
the captain's amber eyes bore into me,
"by the decree of King Saren. I order you to halt."
Unlike his soldiers, the captain rides a vicious snow leoparder, nearly as big as my hut. 8 thick horns protrude from its back, sharp and glistening in black. The monster licks its long, serrated fangs as it snarls, eager to decorate its spotted white coat with our blood. The captain has the same dark copper complexion as the girl, skin free of wrinkles and the scars of battle. When the girl sees him, her hands fly to her hood, her legs begin to shake. Though the captain is young, the guards follow his lead without question. One by one, each soldier unsheathes his sword, pointing the blades our way.
"It's over,"
the girl breathes in dismay. Tears stream down her face as she kneels to the ground. She drops the torch in defeat and pulls out a scroll of wrinkled parchment. I pretend to follow her lead and crouch, touching the cloth in the bottle to the torch's flame. The acrid stench of smoke fills my nose. As the captain closes in, I hurl the weapon at the line of pantheners. "Come on," I will the glass bottle, trailing its arc with my eyes. As it flies, I worry nothing will happen. Then, the world erupts in flames. The fire burns brilliantly, sweeping men and horned pantheners into its blaze. The beasts howl in hysteria, bucking their riders in an attempt to get away. The girl stares in horror, but I grab her arm and force her to move. We're only a few meters away from the gate now, only a few meters away from freedom.
"Close the gate!"
the captain yells as I brush by. The girl crashes into him, but manages to slip through his grasp when he stumbles. The metal gears groan and churn and the wooden gate starts falling down. The checkpoint guards brandish their weapons, our last obstacles to freedom.
"We won't make it," the girl wheezes.
"We don't have a choice."
I sprint faster than I knew it was possible to run. The drunk guard from before unsheathes his sword, raising his arm to slash. His sluggish movement invites more laughter than fear. I smack his skull with a vengeance, taking an extra second to knee him in the groin when he drops. Another guard manages to get in a swing of his sword, but it's easy to block with my staff. I spin the metal rod in my hands, knocking the sword from his grip. His eyes widen as I deliver a roundhouse kick to the face, slamming him against the wooden gate before I pass.
"We did it!"
I want to scream as I run under the cover of the jackalberry trees. I turn to smile at the girl, but she's not there. My heart seizes as I watch her tumble to the ground, a finger's breadth before the gate. Clouds of dirt greet her fall.
"No!" I shriek. "The gate's only moments away from shutting. After all that, she's not going to make it. After coming so close, she's going to die."
"Run," I order myself. "Escape. You have Zain. Baba, you've done all you can."
But the despair in her eyes pulls me back, and I know my blessings have run out. Because despite every protest in my body, I dash through the gates, rolling through moments before they slam shut.
"You're done."
The captain steps forward, bloody from the firebomb.
"Drop your weapon. Now."
It seems like every guard in Lagos is staring us down. They circle us in droves, blocking each path before we can attempt another escape. I pull the girl to her feet and hold my staff high. "This ends here. They will not take me. I will force them to kill me where I stand." My heart slams against my chest as the guards close in. I take a moment to enjoy my last breaths, picturing Mama's soft eyes, her ebony skin. I'm coming, I think, to her spirit. She probably roams Alafia now, floating through the peace of the afterlife. I imagine myself beside her. I'll be with you soon. A thunderous roar rings through the air, freezing the guards in their steps. The cry grows louder and louder, deafening in its approach. I barely have enough time to pull the girl out of harm's way when Nyla's monstrous figure leaps over the gate. Guards tumble back in fear as my Lyanna lands on the dirt path, saliva dripping from her massive fangs. I'm convinced she's a hallucination until I hear Zane shouting from atop Nyla's back.
"The hell you waiting for?" he yells. "Get on!"
Without wasting another second, I hop onto Nyla's back and pull the girl aboard. We take off, jumping from shack to shack before the shanties crumble under her weight. When Nyla gets enough height, she makes a final leap, flying toward the gate. We've almost cleared it when a shock like lightning surges through my veins. The shock travels through every pore in my skin, igniting my being, catching my breath. Time seems to freeze as I look down, locking eyes with the young captain. An unknown force burns behind his amber gaze, a prison I can't escape. Something in his spirit seems to claw onto mine. But before I can spend another second locked in his eyes, Nyla flies over the gate, severing our connection. She lands on the ground with a thud and takes off, thundering through the jackalberry trees. My God, I breathe. Every part of my body screams with strain. I can't believe we actually made it. I can't believe I'm still alive.
Chapter 6. Inan. Failure. Disappointment. Disgrace. Which insult shall Father brand me with today? I run through the possibilities as I enter the gate and ascend the white marble steps of the palace. Failure would be fitting. I'm returning with no fugitive in hand. But Father might not waste his words. He could lead with his fist. This time I cannot blame him, not truly. If I can't defend Lagos from a single thief, how in the world am I supposed to become Orisha's next king? Curse the skies. I pause for a moment, gripping the smooth alabaster railing. Today was to be my victory. Then that silver-eyed wretch got in the way. The diviner's face flashes behind my eyes for the 10th time since I watched her fly over Lagos's gate. The image of her obsidian skin and long white hair stains. Impossible to blink away. Captain, I ignore the salute of the front guards as I enter the main hall. The title feels like a taunt. A proper captain would have sent an arrow through that fugitive's heart.
Where's the prince?
A shrill voice echoes against the palace walls.
Damn it. This is the last thing I need.
Mother pushes toward the castle entrance, Gele tilting as she fights through the guards blocking her path.
Where is he? She cries. Where is Inan?
Mother's face softens with relief. Tears spring to her eyes. She leans in close, pressing a hand against the cut on my cheek.
There were reports of assassins.
I pull away from Mother and shake my head. Assassins would have had clearer targets. They'd be easier to track. The fugitive was just one runaway, one I couldn't catch. But Mother does not care about the attacker's true identity, about my failure, wasted time. She wrings her hands together, fighting back more tears.
Inan, we must...
Her voice trails off. It's only then that she realizes everyone is staring.
She straightens her gele and steps back. I can almost see the claws extending from her hands.
A maggot attacked our city,
she snaps at the assembled crowd.
Do you not have places to be? Go to the market, flush out the slums. Make sure this never happens again.
Soldiers, nobles, and servants clear the hall at once, tripping over one another in their haste. When they are gone, Mother grabs my wrist and yanks me toward the throne room doors.
No, I'm not prepared for Father's wrath. I don't have any news.
And you never will again.
Mother throws open the large wooden doors and drags me across the tiled floors.
Leave the room, she barks.
Like mice, the guards and fanners scatter.
The only soul brave enough to defy Mother is Kaya. She looks unusually handsome in the black chest plate of her new uniform. Admiral? I stare at the decorated seal denoting her elevated rank. There's no mistaking it. She's moved up. But what about Ebele?
The harsh smell of spearmint stings my nose as we near the throne. I scan the tiles and sure enough, two distinct patches of fresh blood stain the cracks.
Skies. Father's already in a mood.
That includes you, Admiral.
Mother hisses, folding her arms across her chest. Kaya's face tightens.
It always does when Mother addresses her with ice.
Kaya glances at Father. He gives a reluctant nod.
My apologies. Kaya bows to Mother, though there is no apology in her tone.
Mother trails Kaya with a scowl until she exits the throne room doors.
Look!
Mother pulls me forward.
Look what the maggots did to your son. This is what happens when you send him to fight. This is what happens when he plays captain of the guard.
I had them cornered.
I yank my wrist out of Mother's hand, twice.
It's not my fault my men broke position after the explosion.
I am not saying it's your fault, my love.
Mother tries to grab my cheek, but I slip away from her rose-scented hand.
Just that it's too dangerous for a prince.
Mother, it's because I am a prince that I must do this, I press. It's my responsibility to keep Orisha safe. I can't protect my people if I hide inside the palace walls.
Mother waves me away, shooing my words as she turns back to Father.
He's the next king of Orisha for Sky's sake. Gamble with some peasant's life.
Father's expression remains blank, as if he's blocked Mother out. He stares out the window as she speaks, twisting the royal ruby that sits on his finger. Beside him, his Majestite blade stands tall in its golden stand, the snow leopener carved into its pommel, gleaming with Father's reflection. The black sword is like an extension of Father, never more than an arm's length from his side.
You said them,
Father finally says.
Who was the fugitive with? When she left the palace, she was alone.
I swallow hard, forcing myself to meet Father's eyes as I step forward. We don't know her identity at the moment. We only know she isn't native to Lagos. But I know she has eyes like the moon. I know the faded scar that nicks her eyebrow. Once again, the diviner's face floods my mind with such clarity it could be a painting hung on the palace wall. Her full lips part in a snarl, her muscles tense against her lean build. Another prick of energy pulses under my skin, sharp and burning, like liquor over an open wound. The searing throbs beneath my scalp. I shudder, forcing the vile sensation away.
The royal physician is reviving the checkpoint guards, I continue.
When they come to, I will have her identity and origin. I can still track them down.
You will do no such thing, Mother says. You could have died today. And then what? Leave Amari to take the throne?
She walks forward, fists clenched, headdress high.
You must stop this, Saran. Stop it this instant.
I jerked my head back. She called Father by his name. Her voice echoes against the red walls of the throne room, a harsh reminder of her gall. We both look at Father. I can't fathom what he'll do. I begin to think Mother's actually won for once when he speaks.
Leave.
Mother's eyes widen. The confidence she wore so proudly drips off her face like sweat.
My king.
Now,
he orders, even in his tone.
I require a private word with my son.
Mother grabs my wrist. We both know how Father's private words usually end, but she can't interfere.
Not unless she wants to face Father's wrath herself. Mother bows, stiff as a sword. She catches my gaze as she turns to leave.
New tears streak the powder caked onto her cheeks. For a long while, Mother's departing footsteps are the only sounds to fill the vast throne room. Then the door slams shut. Father and I are alone.
Do you know the fugitive's identity?
I hesitate. A white lie could save me from a brutal beating, but Father sniffs out lies like hyenas on the hunt. A lie will only make it worse.
No, I answer. But we'll get a lead by sunset. When we do, I'll take my team. Call off your men.
I tense. He won't even give me a chance. Father doesn't think I can do it. He's going to take me off the guard.
Father, I say slowly, please. I didn't anticipate the fugitive's resources before, but I'm prepared now. Grant me a chance to make this right.
Father rises from his throne, slow and deliberate, though his face is calm.
I've seen firsthand the rage that can hide behind his empty gaze.
I drop my eyes to the floor as he approaches. I can already hear the coming shouts. Duty before self. Orisha before me. I failed him today. Him and my kingdom. I let a diviner wreak havoc on all of Lagos. Of course he's going to punish me. I lower my head and hold my breath. I wonder how badly this will hurt. If Father doesn't ask me to remove my armor, he'll go for my face. More bruises for the world to see. He raises his hand, and I shut my eyes. I brace for the blow. But instead of his fist against my cheek, I feel his palm grip my shoulder.
I know you can do this, Inan. But it can only be you.
I blink in confusion. Father's never looked at me this way before.
It's not just any fugitive, he says through his teeth. It's Amari.
Chapter 7. Zeli. We are halfway to Ilorin before Zane feels safe enough to pull on Nyla's reins. When we come to a stop, he doesn't move. I must have sparked a new level of rage. As the crickets chirp in the towering trees, I slide off the saddle and hug Nyla's gigantic face, massaging the special spot between her horns and her ears. Thank you, I whisper into her fur. You're getting the biggest treat when we get home. Nyla purrs and nuzzles her snout against my nose like I'm the cub she's been tasked to protect. It's enough to bring a smile to my face. But when Zane drops to the ground and stalks toward me, I know even Nyla can't protect me from this.
Zane?
What's wrong with you?
He shouts with such fury that a family of blue-whisked bee-eaters flees from the trees overhead.
I didn't have a choice, I rush out. They were going to kill her.
What in God's names do you think they're going to do to you?
Zane slams his fist into a tree with so much force the bark splits.
Why don't you ever think, Zane? Why don't you just do what you're supposed to do?
I did!
I reach into my bag and throw a velvet purse at Zane. Silver pieces spill across the ground. I got 500 for the same fish.
All the money in Orisha won't save us now.
Zane palms his eyes, smearing tears on his cheeks.
They're going to kill us. They're going to kill you, Zane.
Please.
The girl squeaks, drawing our attention. She possesses an uncanny ability to shrink. I forgot she was even here. Her face blanches. Under her long hood, I can barely make out her stark amber eyes.
This is my fault. All of it.
Thank you. I roll my eyes, ignoring Zane's glare. Without her, Zane would be nothing but smiles. Our family would finally be safe.
What did you do?
I ask. Why were the king's men chasing you?
Don't tell us.
He shakes his head and jabs his finger toward Lagos.
Go back, turn yourself in. It's the only chance we have to.
She removes her cloak, silencing us both. Zane can't look away from her regal face. I can't stop staring at the golden headdress fastened into her braid. It dips onto her forehead, all swooping chains and glittering leaves. In the center, a diamond-crusted seal shines, an adorned snow leopener, which only one family is allowed to wear.
Oh, my gods, I breathe. The princess? Amari?
I kidnapped Orisha's princess. I can't explain,
Amari says quickly. Now I hear the royal affect that makes my teeth grind.
I know what you must be thinking, but my life was in danger.
Your life? I whisper.
Your life?
Red flashes behind my eyes. The princess cries out when I slam her against a tree. She chokes, eyes wide with fear, as I wrap my hands around her neck and squeeze.
What are you doing? Zane shouts.
Showing the princess what it looks like when her life's actually in danger.
Zane yanks me back by the shoulders.
Have you lost your damn mind?
She lied to me, I shout back. She told me they were going to kill her. She swore she needed my help.
I did not lie,
Amari wheezes. Her hand flies to her throat. Fathers executed members of the royal family just for sympathizing with diviners. He would not hesitate to do the same to me. She reaches into her dress and pulls out a scroll. Gripping it so tightly, her hand shakes.
The king needs this.
Amari coughs and gazes at the parchment with a weight I can't place.
This scroll can change everything. It can bring magic back.
We stare at Amari with blank faces. She's lying. Magic can't come back. Magic died 11 years ago.
I thought it was impossible too.
Amari registers our doubt,
but I saw it with my own eyes. A diviner touched the scroll and became a magi.
Her voice softens.
She summoned light with her hands.
A lighter? I step closer, studying the scroll. Zane's disbelief sticks to me like the heat in the air. Yet the more Amari speaks, the more I dare to dream. There was too much terror in her eyes, a genuine fear for her well-being. Why else would half the army chase down the princess if her escape didn't pose some greater risk? Where's the magi now? I ask.
Gone.
Tears brim in Amari's eyes.
Father killed her. He murdered her. Just because of what she could do.
Amari wraps her arms around herself, squeezing her eyes shut to keep the tears inside. She seems to shrink, drowning in her grief. Zane's exasperation softens, but her tears don't mean a thing to me. She became a magi. Her voice echoes in my head. She summoned light with her hands. Give me that. I motion for the scroll, eager to inspect it. But the moment it touches my fingers, an unnatural shock travels through my body. I jump back in surprise, dropping the parchment to cling to the bark of a jackalberry tree.
What's wrong? Zane asks.
I shake my head. I don't know what to say. The strange sensation buzzes beneath my skin, foreign yet familiar at the same exact time. It rumbles in my core, warming me from the inside out. It beats like a second heartbeat, vibrating like a she? The thought makes my heart clench, revealing a gaping hole inside me that I didn't even know still existed. When I was young, Ashe was all I ever wanted. I prayed for the day I would feel its heat in my veins. As the divine power of the gods, the presence of Ashe in our blood is what separates diviners from magi, is what we draw on to use our sacred gifts. Ashe is what magi need to do magic at all. I stare at my hands for the shadows of death Mama could conjure in her sleep. When Ashe awakens, our magic awakens as well. But is that what's happening now?
No.
I crush the spark inside of me before it can blossom into hope. If magic's back, that changes everything. If it's truly returned, I don't even know what to think. With magic come the gods, thrust into the center of my life after 11 years of silence. I barely picked up the shattered pieces of me after the raid. If they abandon me once more, I won't be able to do it again. Can you feel it? Amari's voice drops to a whisper as she takes a step back. Kaya said the scroll transforms diviners into magi. When Binta touched it, all these lights burst from her hands. I turn up my palm, searching for the lavender glow of Reaper magic. Before the raid, when a diviner transformed, there was no guarantee what kind of magi that diviner would be. Often diviners inherited the magic of their parents, almost always deferring to the magic in their mother's bloodline. With a Corsidan father, I was sure I would become a Reaper, like Mama. I longed for the day I would feel the magic of the dead in my bones. But right now, all I can feel is an unnerving tingle in my veins. I pick up the parchment with care, wary it will trigger something again. While I can make out a yellow painting of the sun on the weathered scroll, the rest of the symbols are unreadable. So ancient they look older than time itself.
Don't tell me you believe this.
Zane lowers his voice.
Magic's gone, Zane. It's never coming back.
I know he's just trying to protect me. These are words he's had to tell me before, wiping my tears, stifling his own. Words I've always listened to, but this time. Others who touch the scroll, I turn to Amari. They're magi now? Their gifts returned? Yes. She nods eagerly at first, but with time her enthusiasm fades. Their magic came back, but Father's men got to them. My blood chills as I stare at the scroll. Though Mama's corpse flashes into my mind, it's not her face I picture, bloodied and beaten. It's mine. But she didn't have her magic, a small voice reminds me. She didn't have a chance to fight. And like that, I'm 6 years old again, curled behind the fire in our Ibadan home. Zane wraps his arms around me and points me toward the wall, forever trying to shield me from the world's pain. Crimson splatters into the air as the guard beats Baba again and again. Mama screams for them to stop while two soldiers jerk the chain over her neck, so tight the magicite links draw blood from her skin. She chokes as they drag her from the hut like an animal, kicking and thrashing. Except this time, she would have magic. This time, she could win. I closed my eyes and let myself imagine what could have been.
Bo Ariwo Iku!
Mama hisses through her teeth, given new life with my imagination.
Paipoda! Jade ninuye jeara!
The guards strangling her freeze, shaking violently as her incantation takes hold. They scream as she rips their spirits from their bodies, killing them with the wrath of a reaper in full command of her gifts. Mama's magic feeds off her rage. With the dark shadows twisting around her, she looks like Oya, the goddess of life and death herself. With a guttural cry, Mama tears the chain from her neck and wraps the black links around the remaining guard's throat. With magic, she saves Baba's warrior spirit. With magic, she's still alive.
If what you say is true,
Zane's anger cuts into my imagination.
You can't stay. They're killing people for this. If they catch it with Zane.
His voice cracks, and my heart rips into so many pieces I don't know if my chest will hold. I could screw everything up for the remainder of his days, yet Zane would still die trying to keep me safe. I need to protect him. It's his turn to be saved.
We have to go.
I roll the parchment and place it in my pack. Moving so quickly, I almost forget the silver-filled purse on the ground.
Real or not, we have to get back to Baba. Escape while we still can.
Zane swallows his frustration and mounts Nyla. I crawl on behind him when the princess speaks, shy, like a child.
Well, what about me?
What about you? I ask. My hatred for her family flares. Now that we have the scroll, I long to leave Amari stranded in the forest, let her starve or become a hyena's prey.
If you're taking that stupid scroll, she has to come, Zane sighs. Otherwise, she'll lead the guard straight to us.
Amari's face blanches when I turn back to her, as if I'm the one she has to fear.
Just get on. I scoot forward on Nyla's saddle.
As much as I want to leave her behind, we're not done with each other yet.
Chapter 8. Inan.
I don't understand. 1,000 thoughts race through my mind. I try to latch on to the facts. Magic in Orisha. An ancient scroll. Treason by Amari's hand? It's not possible. Even if I could believe the magic, I can't accept my sister's involvement. Amari can barely speak up at a banquet. She lets Mother dictate her clothes. Amari's never spent a day outside these walls, and now she's fled Lagos with the only thing that can bring our empire down? I think back, recalling the moment the fugitive girl crashed into me. When we collided, something sharp and hot crackled through my bones. A strange and powerful attack. In my shock, I didn't peer under the fugitive's hood. But if I had, would I really have seen my sister's amber eyes peering back? No, I whisper to myself. It's outlandish. I have half a mind to commit father to the royal physician, but it's impossible to deny the look in his eyes. Crazed. Calculating. In 18 years, I've seen many things in his gaze, but never fear. Never terror. Before you were born, the Magi were drunk with power, always plotting to overthrow our line.
Father explains,
even with their insurgency, my father fought to be fair. But that fairness got him killed.
Along with your older brother, I think silently. Your first wife, your firstborn son. There isn't a noble in Orisha who doesn't know of the slaughter father endured at the Magi's hands. A carnage that would one day be avenged by the raid. Out of instinct, I finger the tarnished pawn in my pocket. A stolen gift from father.
The Senet piece is the only survivor of Father's childhood set, a game of strategy he used to play with me when I was young. Though the cool metal usually anchors me, today it's warm to the touch. It almost stings as it passes through my fingers, burning with Father's impending truth.
When I rose to the throne, I knew magic was the root of all our pain. It's crushed empires before ours, and as long as it lives, it shall crush empires again.
I nod, remembering Father's rants from long before the raid. The Britannis, the Portoganis, the Spani Empire. All civilizations destroyed because those who had magic craved power, and those in charge didn't do enough to stop them.
When I discovered the raw alloy Bretonians used to subdue magic, I thought that would be enough. With Magicite, they created prisons and weapons and chains. Following their tactics, I did the same. But even that wasn't enough to tame those treacherous maggots. If our kingdom was ever going to survive, I knew I had to take magic away.
What?
I jerk forward, unable to trust my own ears. Magic is beyond us. How could Father attack an enemy like that?
Magic is a gift from the gods, he continues, a spiritual connection between them and mankind. If the gods broke that connection with royals generations ago, I knew their connection to the Magi could be severed too.
My head spins with Father's words. If he doesn't need to see the physician, I will. The only time I dared to ask him about the Orishan gods, his answer was swift. Gods are nothing without fools to believe in them. I took his words to heart, built my world upon his unwavering conviction. Yet here he stands, telling me they exist, that he waged war against them. Skies. I stare at the blood staining the cracks in the floor. I've always known Father was a powerful man. I just never realized how deep that power ran.
After my coronation, I set out to find a way to sever the spiritual bond. It took me years, but eventually I discovered the source of the Magi's spiritual connection, and I ordered my men to destroy it. Until today, I believed I had succeeded in wiping magic from the face of this earth. But now, that damn scroll is threatening to bring magic back.
I let Father's words wash over me, passing through it all until even the most inconceivable facts move like Senet pawns in my head. Break the connection, break the magic. Destroy the people after our throne.
But if magic was gone,
my stomach twists into knots, but I need to know the answer.
Why go through with the raid? Why kill all those people?
Father runs his thumb down the serrated edge of his Magicite blade and walks to the paneled windows, the same place I stood as a child when the Magi of Lagos went up in flames. 11 years later, the charcoal smell of burning flesh is still a constant memory, as vivid as the heat in the air.
For magic to disappear for good, every Magi had to die. As long as they tasted that power, they would never stop fighting to bring it back.
Every Magi. That's why he let the children live. Diviners don't manifest their abilities until they're 13. Powerless children, who had never wielded magic, didn't pose a threat. Father's answer is calm. So matter of fact, I cannot doubt that he did the right thing. But the memory of ash settles on my tongue. Bitter. Sharp. I have to wonder if Father's stomach churned that day. I wonder if I'm strong enough to do the same.
Magic is a blight,
Father breaks into my thoughts. A fatal, festering disease.
If it takes hold of our kingdom the way it's taken others, no one will survive its attack. How do we stop it?
The scroll is the key,
Father continues.
That much I know. Something about it has the power to bring magic back. If we don't destroy it, it shall destroy us.
And Amari? My voice lowers. Will we have to?
Will I?
The thought is so wretched I can't speak. Duty before self. That's what Father will say. It's what he shouted at me that fateful day. But the thought of raising my blade against Amari after all these years makes my throat dry. I can't be the king Father wants me to be. I can't kill my little sister.
Your sister has committed treason.
He speaks slowly.
But it is no fault of her own. I allowed her to get close to that maggot. I should have known her simple disposition would lead her astray.
So Amari can live. Father nods.
If she's captured before anyone discovers what she's done. That's why you can't take your men. You and Admiral Kaya must go and recover the scroll alone.
Relief slams into my chest like a blow from Father's fist. I can't kill my little sister, but I can bring her back in. A sharp knock raps against the door. Admiral Kaya pops her head through. Father waves his hand, welcoming her in. Behind her, I catch a glimpse of Mother scowling. A new heaviness settles on my shoulders. Skies. Mother doesn't even know where Amari is.
We've found a noble. He claims he saw the maggot who aided the fugitive, Kaya says. She sold him a rare fish from Ilorin.
Did you cross-reference the ledger? I ask.
Kaya nods.
It shows only one diviner from Ilorin today. Zeli Adebola, age 17.
Zeli. My mind fits the missing piece to her striking image. The name rolls off Kaya's tongue like silver. Too soft for a diviner who attacked my city. Let me go to Ilorin, I blurt out. My mind runs through the plan as I speak. I've seen a map of Ilorin before. The four quadrants of the floating village. A few hundred villagers, most lowly fishermen. We could take it with 10 men. That's all Admiral Kaya and I need.
I'll find the scroll and bring Amari back. Just give me a chance.
Father twists his ring as he thinks. I can hear the rejection sitting on his tongue.
If those men discover anything, I'll kill them, I interrupt.
The lie slips from my mouth with ease. If I can redeem my former failures, no one else needs to die. But Father cannot know that. He barely trusts me as it is. He requires swift, unflinching commitment. As captain, I must give it to him.
Very well, Father agrees. Head out. Be quick.
Thank the skies. I adjust my helmet and bow as deeply as I can. I'm almost out the door when Father calls out.
Inan!
Something twists in his tone. Something dark. Dangerous.
When you have what you need, burn that village to the ground.